In 2017, Wichita State University celebrates the 44th year of their playwriting competition. Each year, hopeful playwrights around the country send in their original scripts for a chance to be produced on stage by the WSU School of Performing Arts program. The winning playwright is awarded travel and lodging, as well as a chance to participate in the Kennedy Center American College Theater Festival, along with submission of the script in playwriting categories. The winner of last year's competition, Liz Maestri, will see her script, House Beautiful, produced February 15th to the 19th at Welsbacher Theater at the Metroplex. WSU describes House Beautiful as a love letter celebrating the life that exists in the tiniest of houses and smallest of rooms. Meanwhile, January 19th marked an important moment for the theater community when professional, community, college, and high school theaters in every state joined forces for the Ghostlight Project. The Ghostlight Project was created by the theater world to show its support for, quote, inclusion, participation, and compassion for all, regardless of race, class, religion, country of origin, immigration status, disability, age, gender identity, or sexual orientation. The name comes from the tradition of leaving a ghost light on in the darkened theater. Participating Kansas theaters were Emporia State University Theater, Kansas State University Theater Organization in Manhattan, the Percolator Art Space in Lawrence, the Barn Players in Mission, and the William Inge Center for the Arts in Independence.
Support for this podcast comes from Espresso to Go-Go, creating handcrafted coffee drinks using locally roasted beans at the corner of Douglas and St. Francis. Guests may order from the wall or from their hearts. Online at Facebook and Twitter.
And we welcome you on stage with Sanda Moore Coleman. I'm Fletcher Powell. How are you doing, Sanda?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. Tell me a little bit more about this Ghostlight Project. Is this the first time this sort of thing has happened?
Well, yes. It was put together by the community to happen the day before the presidential inauguration as a show of inclusion. What I find interesting about it is that for a long time now, I would say, you know, maybe since 9/11, our society has been in a state of uncertainty and anxiety. And I think you see that reflected in the shows that are produced, because a lot of them, I mean, there's a heavy nostalgia. You know, as you and I have discussed before, there are a lot of remakes and reboots, and which is not to say that there aren't new plays being written, wonderful plays being written, but by and large, people are going to see things that they know, and they are going to see them because when you are uncertain, you want the familiar. And so what I see happening now is, and I think the Ghost Light Project is a good example of this transition that the theater world is making into a more of a protest theater, if you will. Now, I mean, even Hamilton, which was fresh and innovative in so many ways, still married the marriage of nostalgia with the modern is brilliant, but imagine if instead of being about something that happened in the golden light of our past, the creation of the country and what that meant, and imagine that being staged as a modern type of thing, I think the reaction would be different. Of course, what's brilliant about Hamilton is that it extends ownership of the United States to everyone, which is how it should be. But as I say, still, it's based on a nostalgic event that happened in our political past, which is not to say that political theater is new, because, of course, it's been going on since ancient Greece. The nice thing about theater is that it's immediate. You know, you can write a script, get a group of actors together and stage it in far less time than, say, a movie.
So how did this Ghostlight project work? Did each of these different organizations create their own work and stage them? Was there something pre-written that was staged? What was the project?
I think that different people did it differently, but the main concept was to create what they were calling a brave space in which people could be who they are without danger. Inclusion has always been the byword in theater. It doesn't matter what you look like, what you sound like, where you're from. If you're in theater and you're working in theater, you are accepted. And I think what the Ghostlight Project was meant to do was to take a stand and say, we still stand for inclusion. So I was surprised that none of the Wichita theaters were involved, but I think it was a missed opportunity. Maybe they didn't know about it. At any rate, like I said, political theater is nothing new, and it started with the ancient Greeks. And we can see kind of a reflection. Nowadays, we have comedians. Back then, they had comic theater and satires, political satires. And so what began in ancient Greece as a comment on the political behaviors, on the behaviors of prominent Athenian citizens and their behavior in, say, the Peloponnesian War, we move past that. You can see it also in Shakespeare. Shakespeare wrote some political plays. If you strip Hamlet to its bare bones, what you have is a struggle for political power. Macbeth, certainly, all about the struggle for power, one man's struggle for power. In Soviet Russia, they had agitprop, which, you know, was the marriage of agitation and propaganda, which was used to spread Marxist principles. Then, there are so many different types of protest theater, what we would call protest theater. In the 60s, there was guerrilla theater. The Youth International Party in the late 1960s created theatrical stunts for attention, to draw attention to their cause. And one of the, for instance, an example of guerrilla theater was the running of a pig for president in 1968. And then documentary theater, which is what's interesting to me about documentary theater is that it doesn't privilege any source above the other. It attempts to draw attention to social issues by focusing on interviews, news stories, and that sort of thing. The Laramie Project is an example of that. John McGrath is the founder of the Scottish Theatre Company 784. And according to him, he says, and I'm quoting here, "The theater can never cause a social change. It can articulate pressure towards one, help people celebrate their strengths, and maybe build their self-confidence. Above all, it can be the way people find their voice, their solidarity, and their collective determination." So what I take from that in some ways is that this can be an exciting time, that if you are a passionate playwright, the stage will hear your voice, and this is the time when those things can really happen. And I think they can change things. And I'm going to give you a rundown of some plays, political plays, that I think did change society, did galvanize people, did cause people to think twice. And that's really what we're asking for. If we start with Aristophanes, the one that everyone immediately thinks of is Lysistrata, which is about the women of Athens who decide that there will be no more sex with their husbands until they stop the war. And the play was considered a comedy, but it was written from grief. I mean, the thousands of people died in the Athenian defeat at Syracuse. And what's interesting about this particular play is that in March of 2003, there was a movement in which Lysistrata was staged in all 50 states and on 6 continents as a protest against a possible war in Iraq. The Trojan Women by Euripides was another anti-war protest against the Athenians' capture of Milos, the island of Milos, which was neutral. In the process, the men were killed and the women and children were sold into slavery. Richard III, director Lindsay Posner, said about Richard III, Richard, and this is a quote, Richard III is probably the greatest ever dissection and portrait of a tyrant. It charts the character of Richard as a psychopath rising to power, sowing the seeds of his own undoing. It's also a dissection of real politics. You can stage it in Saddam Hussein's Iraq, in the White House, in Whitehall. In 1892, Ibsen wrote The Enemy of the People, about the original whistleblower. Dr. Stockman is the chief medical officer who finds out that the baths of the town are contaminated, and he wants full disclosure, but of course that causes a lot of problems. I won't tell you the whole play. Brecht, I said earlier that political theater was passionate, and for the most part it is, until you come to Brecht. And the thing about Brecht is that he was rebelling against the Aristotle's tradition of the theater as a spectator activity. He wanted to stir things up, but he didn't want people to react emotionally. He wanted to reach them intellectually, and he thought that if he could cause them to see things slightly differently, to take an intellectual turn, then he was succeeding. But he has always worked in terms of Marxism, and that was his passion. And some of Brecht's works that you would be familiar with would be The Three Penny Opera, Mother Courage and Her Children, and The Good Person of Szechuan. Mother Courage is a show that has been produced again and again. And part of it is that she's a survivor. She stands out as this person who is just holding on during the 30 Years' War against all odds. And one of the things that's interesting about this play is that Tony Kushner wrote a translation of it, and he says about Mother Courage that she refuses to understand the nature of her tragic circumstances. She is afraid that looking back will weaken her. And then, of course, in the United States, we have Arthur Miller's The Crucible, which was ostensibly about the witch hunts in Salem during the 17th century, but has also been understood as a parable for the McCarthy witch hunts of the 1950s. And Lindsay Posner again said about The Crucible that it is a remarkable play about betrayal and the nature of truth. And certainly it has come to represent political repression in our society. And then finally, I would come to the play My Name is Rachel Corey, which is a one-woman play based on the diaries and emails of a 23-year-old young woman, American peace activist. Her diaries and emails were edited by Guardian journalist Catherine Viner and by the late Alan Rickman. And it was about her experiences in Gaza in March of 2003 when she was killed by an Israeli army bulldozer while she was trying to protect the home of a Palestinian family from demolition. So as you can see, political theater is nothing new. We've been doing it for a long time. But I think that we will see more and more of that now when there is so much upheaval in our society. I think that people have moved on from the uncertainty, to the dwelling in uncertainty, to reacting to this, the state of reality that we find ourselves in. And it's, as I said before, if you are a passionate playwright who has something to say, the stage is where you will find your voice. Now is your time.
Well, that sounds like a good place to wrap up for this week. Sanda, thank you very much, as always.
My pleasure.
And for KMUW, I'm Fletcher Powell.